Welcome to You Learn Something New Every Day. I am Joan Boyko, Coordinator of Communications and Community Outreach for the Palm Springs Unified School District. We are here on KGX and KWXY each Sunday. We also invite you to download and subscribe to our podcast. It's really easy. All you have to do is go to iTunes, look for You Learn Something New, press subscribe. You'll get a new show each Sunday afternoon. This show, of course, is produced by my very dedicated team of student interns here in the Digital Arts Technology Academy at Cathedral City High School under the direction of Mr. Bryce Johnson. And they're going to be leaving soon. They're all graduating. But we have a new team in the wings, so that's a good thing because they've done their jobs and they've interviewed students who are interested in carrying on this tradition. So we're very, very happy. As I tell you each week, if you listen to the show, you will not learn just one new thing, but many, many new things. Today is most definitely, definitely no exception. I added a definitely because I am very pleased to welcome our fearless leader, our superintendent of schools, Sandy Lyon. Welcome, boss.
Thank you, Joan.
Thank you for being here.
Glad to do it.
So it's the honeymoon's almost over because you think you get a year to be on a quote honeymoon, and you started July 1st, so you have about another 4 weeks, and then the honeymoon's officially over. So give, for those who, I know you were on the show when you first started, but it's been almost a year, so tell everybody a little bit about your background.
Okay, so this is actually my ninth year as a superintendent, if you include 3 years as a superintendent principal. So when I think about that, that's a little bit longer than it seems like. I started out as a classroom teacher. Before that, I was a journalist, actually, print journalism, and did marketing for a hospital, and ultimately went back and got my teaching credential. I taught high school. I taught middle school. I was an elementary principal, a middle school principal, director of curriculum instruction and assessment, so really the traditional sort of path. Superintendent principal of a one school district in northern Los Angeles County, and I had a great job as a chief leadership officer with Palmdale Elementary School District, where I supervised 26 principals, which was a really unique experience. And then from there, I went to Santa Monica, Malibu as the superintendent, and a very different setting than I'd worked in as an urban seaside community with very different kinds of needs across the district. And then when Palm Springs opened up, I was excited to throw my hat in the ring. I had done some work here over the years as a trainer for Thinking Maps, and loved it. My husband and I loved it. He would come with me when I was training on the weekends, and we knew we would love to live here, but at the time, family circumstances just weren't such that I could even entertain looking at any open position, and so had sort of put that aside. And then when Chris retired, it just seemed like a great opportunity to at least try, and I was fortunate enough to be selected from a strong pool of candidates, and I feel just lucky every day. I do pinch myself and make sure that it's real, but it's a healthy organization. It's a great district, so many good things happening, so I feel very happy to be a part of it.
I agree with you. And before we move off of St. Paul, because that's St. Paul, Sandy's husband, Paul.
I like that.
He really is. I mean, just so he's got one more year, but he's been teaching for 25, 26 years in Antelope Valley.
Right. Same high school.
Which is where you came from.
That's right.
Originally. That was the district that you were the superintendent
No,
in?
He's in the high school district, Antelope Valley Union High School District, and I was in the elementary district for a while. So, he's been out there most of his career.
He commutes first in aerospace. Every day. It's not like he's living up there during the weekend, comes home on the weekends. No. He makes that drive every day.
That's but he's happy to Saint do it. Paul. I know, he is St. Paul, and he's happy to do it. He loves his high school. Like so many educators, it's really hard when you get connected to a group of kids and to a staff to leave. And he's I think, one of the most senior teachers there at this point. He loves it. He's always loved it. And so he just couldn't imagine, even in the last, because he's done this commute, not this commute, but he's had a pretty serious commute for the last 6 years. And he never wanted to look and transfer elsewhere. He really wanted to try and stay there until he retired. So I admire that.
That's great. That's really great. And so in some ways, it seems like you just got here. In other ways, it seems like, you know, it's been forever, which is that's not a bad thing at all. That's a really good thing. And you started to reflect a little bit and said, you know, how what a great place it is. Mm-hmm. And I've been here for 17 years, and I definitely concur.
Yep.
I as a working journalist before I came here, I, as you probably remember, there's very little money. There's very little gratitude. You have to get your gratitude from the fact that you're doing it because you want to make a contribution and you want to impact people's lives. I didn't think it mattered to me whether the people I work for and with cared about what I was producing or whether they ever said thank you. Because that's how I got my fulfillment, was I wrote a column and people would write to me and say, thank you, and thanks for the story you wrote. And so that was fine. Until I left there and I came here, and I always knew I wanted to do something in education, but it would never be teaching because I don't have the patience. So I thought I'd sit on a school board eventually, because that was always my favorite thing of when I worked for the newspaper covering education. But then when I saw the ad for this job, communications for school district, I said, that's it. Then I can make my contribution and make a difference without actually teaching. And wow, that's cool. And I haven't looked back, but my point, and of course I digress, I'm really good at that. Luckily we have time, is that immediately you just felt like it was a family. And people actually did take the time to say, thanks for doing that. And I really appreciate what you do. And I was like, wow. And it just makes like all the difference in the world getting up and going to work every day when you have that kind of appreciation for the from the people that you're trying to do a job for and with.
Right.
And it does make a difference. And you commented on that when you started, that when you went around and talked to people, they not only talk the talk, but they they
put
said
their
they
hands
love it.
Over their heart and said, I love this district. I see that
and
all the time.
And they mean it.
It's true. It's very much a family feel, a lot of pride in what we do, camaraderie, all those things that you just talked about. And I think the appreciativeness is something here that isn't in all school districts. So you might have had a different experience as a PIO in another place. And you also need to know you're very uniquely qualified to do what you do, and I think that makes the difference, where people truly are appreciative, not just because of what you do, but how you do it.
Oh, well, thank you. I wasn't fishing for a compliment.
You got it anyway.
But that's nice. Thank you very much. But you know this already, but I'll just share with our listeners that my legacy will be the traffic reporter, because I try to, I'm on the website, so I get alerts when we have wind and rain closures, and I just pass them along, and that's, you get more reaction from that than anything else. Thank you so much. I was going to go home that way.
But you know, the thing you forget about, and it's a little bit different now with people having their phones and being able to check between classes and on breaks and stuff than it used to be even 10 years ago. But teachers are really on a roll during the day.
True.
People in their groove are on a roll, and they're not necessarily on a computer, so they don't get an alert. They don't get the update. And so what they do is check their email before they leave.
Right.
And so they're able to do that. So that's a huge service to people who otherwise really would be getting on the road and getting stuck.
It went a little too far though. And recently one of the teachers, I sent something out before work because the road was already closed. So I said, well, let me send it out in case people see their email. I got an email back, said, thank you very much for this. Do you think you could add my personal email address to your list? And I said, no, but I can give you the link so you can sign up and get these alerts yourself.
Right, exactly. But see, personalized service would be even better.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, so what overall, your other than the fact that people love what they're doing right here, what are your general impressions of what's happening in Palm Springs Unified?
I think a lot of great stuff is happening. We have some pockets of true excellence and innovation. And I think we are not unlike other school districts who have weathered cutbacks in money. It's either feast or famine, it seems, right, in school districts. And so one of our challenges is always taking a step back from the organization and looking at it and saying, do we have the right structures and systems in place to do the work that we do? It's kind of, we always use the metaphor of building the plane while you're flying it. Mm. And it's really hard to do. It's tricky. And so I think one of the things that can be an advantage in having somebody come in with fresh eyes, if you're living it every day, and I always liken it to, you know, you don't see the photos in your house every day that are on the wall because they've been up there so long. And you're just used to them. You become sort of inured to it. So when somebody else comes in and just says, why do we do that? Have we thought about what if? It's not that you're bringing some brilliant idea to the table. It's really just asking people to think about things differently, that because they're working so hard, they're not taking the time to stop and do that. So we've been doing a lot of that and trying to see, how do we keep things moving the right trajectory, which they are, target some of our student groups that we know we need to move at a faster rate, and make sure that we really clearly messaged what are the priorities to our schools and our staffs. And so, you know, we have so many things going on in public education right now, and technology has accelerated everything at some, you know, an exponential rate. And so trying to help people focus on the main things doesn't mean you can't be creative and do the other things, but being clear on that. And I think from the feedback I've had from staff and teachers, that's something that they would like. And so that's one of the things that we're working in the direction of, is putting a group together that's going to help us define that work and really have a message to say, you know, in Palm Springs Unified, these are the things that are non-negotiable for our elementary schools and for our middle schools and high schools.
And that's, you brought up a really good point about, you know, you see that the pictures are there all the time, so you don't, and it's, you get to this mentality like, we've always done it like that.
Right.
And so you just think that it's the right thing to do because you've always done it like that. Until, of course, the state comes up with some
new
thing. Initiative.
Exactly. And, you know, the thing is, just because you've done it that way, it doesn't mean it's the right thing, and it doesn't mean it's the wrong thing either. But it may not be the most effective thing.
Right.
And so that's the other challenge for us. And, you know, having been a classroom teacher and been a principal, I know exactly what that day is like. You're making 248 decisions every hour. You're swamped with, you know, input. You're trying to create some output, and you're planning, and you've got a life. And it is a really challenging piece. And the one thing that is clear to me is how hard our staff works here.
Yeah.
And so I always am a fan of working smarter, not harder. And so I think that's really what we're going to try to drill down on. And still keep, you know, the innovation and the flexibility. Sometimes when people hear, I've had people say, you know, the word system is antithetical to creativity. And I just disagree. I think you need the system so that the creativity can happen and really be meaningful and impactful. And that's where we want to see, is where can we tighten it up so that when we're loose, you don't have to worry about things falling through the cracks.
Really well said, and a very good point. And It's kind of become a buzzword, but it's an important word, and with it is a very important meaning, and that's equity. Mm-hmm. And I think I know that that is a major focus for us, and should be a major mm-hmm. focus for every school district. Mm-hmm. But it's relatively new in mm-hmm. that I don't think people really looked at it as a system.
Right.
I don't think people really looked at equality.
Right.
And so we'll talk more about it in the next segment, but describe, what is the difference between equality and equity?
Well, at a very simplistic level, equal means everyone gets the same thing, and equity is people get what they need.
Mm-hmm.
And so the ambiguity of that is what people struggle with, and
right.
the concept of, is that fair? And so that you really have to give people a context for understanding why it is the right thing. And knowing that there are times where equal is the right thing as well. So this is what we all struggle with. People want to know very linearly and through some algorithm, how do I figure that out? And a lot of it is professional discernment and judgment. It's having the sort of frames that you look at the world through the lens so that you're always asking yourself questions to provoke that thinking. Is this fair? Is this the right thing? How should we apply this? Should we implement it for everyone? Is it going to be more effective for a few? So really having some questions that you use when you're rolling something out or you're thinking about a new program to ask yourself if you're doing it in the most efficacious way.
Right. And there's a great, and again, we're going to get ready to take a break, so okay, we'll talk about this some more, but great graphic that we saw recently in a presentation. So you have a kid, and then you have an older kid, and then you have an adult, and they're all trying to look over a fence. And you don't have them all, if you have them all at the same level and don't provide elevation, then the little ones can't see.
Right.
And so you have to give them what they need so they can all see.
Right. And I heard an interesting, oh, we're running
out of time. Yeah, yeah. Okay. Stay with us. You're listening to You Learn Something New Every Day. We will be right back.
All the way down your very own driveway, Palm Springs Volvo has provided the safest and best selections for the Coachella Valley with their innovations and technology. With the latest models such as the Volvo S60, V60, XC60, XC70, XC90, and other wide ranges of service, their dedicated staff guarantees to put customers behind the wheel in the right car, along with great leases and loans. So come on down to Palm Springs Volvo at 67977 East Palm Canyon Drive in Cathedral City, located in the Cathedral City Auto Center. Or contact them at 760-321-6600.
Welcome back to You Learn Something New Every Day. I am Joan Boyko, Coordinator of Communications and Community Outreach for the Palm Springs Unified School District. We are here each Sunday on KGX and KWXY. We also invite you to download and subscribe to our podcast. All you have to do is go to iTunes, look for You Learn Something New, press subscribe. You'll get a new show each Sunday afternoon. This show is produced by my team of very dedicated student interns here in the Digital Arts Technology Academy at Cathedral City High School under the direction of Mr. Bryce Johnson. I'm very pleased to continue with our very special guest, our superintendent of schools, soon to be Dr. Sandy Lyon.
Yes.
By the time this show airs, you will have walked already.
I'll have walked, and I'll be either defending that week or right around the corner.
Very, very cool. Yes. I have to share this because I'm very proud and impressed. As I heard that Sandy was working on her doctorate when she joined us a year ago, and I just figured, and so did most people, I think, well, that's not going to happen anytime soon. You take on a job like this, and you're kind of going to just put that aside for a while because there's so many new things and new people, and and you did not miss a beat. Classes every weekend, and
but I have no life at all. I sleep, well, I eat, I work.
Well, and you have St. Paul though.
I do have St. Paul,
and two wonderful sons who are making their contributions in life, and I look forward to meeting them eventually.
Very lucky because I'm like so many women my age where I raised kids, and so made a choice not to get my doctorate, and my husband was changing careers. He wanted to be a teacher. He really didn't have any interest in being in administration. He wanted to be able to do other things in his life, and so that was fine. I knew I loved it, and I wanted to get my doctorate, and then I actually enrolled in a program a long time ago, and my father passed away. And so then that, we became caregivers, and that sort of went on for my kids and then my parents and my mother, and then when she passed in 2014, it seemed like, okay, that's a good time for me to go ahead and do it, and I jumped right in, and so it's been for 2013, it's been pretty fast since then. It's a little bit crazy, too, at my age, I think, because, you know, you're on the downside of your career. But I'm really glad I did it. I've networked with people I would never have connected with. I've learned things. You know, I always say somebody in a dissertation program is a little bit dangerous because they think they probably know more than they do. But I've had a lot of exposure to ideas and literature and research that I think is informing, you know, the things that we're doing right now in cabinet and in the district.
And what's your dissertation
topic? Dissertation is the effect of district-provided professional development on principals' efficacy, self-efficacy as leaders and as instructional leaders. And so something near and dear to my heart because I've been a professional developer. I did that for a private company. And districts across the country spend millions and millions of dollars on professional development. There's a lot of literature around teachers and the effects that teachers get from that professional development. There's very little around principal professional development, and really every time we bring principals together, it's a professional development opportunity. So when we do principal meetings, but we often don't frame them in that way. It's a meeting. And so really trying to look at what would help principals be more effective as instructional leaders and what would make them feel more effective in their leadership role. So it's been an interesting topic, and hopefully we'll glean some things, some recommendations that will be meaningful for other districts as they wrestle with the same issues.
That's great. And there's nothing better than good professional development, and there's not much worse than crappy professional development, because you have that too.
That's right.
And
that's
so you have to really pick and choose what's right and not what's just, you know, taking up some time.
And time is so precious. And the other challenge is you can also do too much great professional development. And so I think we have a lot of wonderful, meaningful learning experiences for our principals, but are we really clear on what they're supposed to do with it? What's the priority? Where do we want them to start first? Can they transfer that learning to their own school site? Do they have an opportunity to check to see if it's correct or not? So all of those other nuances that really go with deep learning that we really spend, I think, a lot of time and do well with teachers, but principals is that sort of middle management group are sometimes neglected.
Yeah, and I don't want to leave. We kind of, you know, you were in mid-sentence and I cut you off talking about equity. No, you shouldn't be sorry. It was me. I wasn't watching the clock. So getting back to the whole equity, because I think pretty much like everything that we're doing and everything we're trying to put in place is based on making sure that all our kids get what they need.
That's right.
So how are we going about making sure that that happens? That's a global question, but
it's a big question.
Yeah.
So one of the things that we just had happen was we had an outside group, a consulting group, the Principals Exchange came in and did a review of the district and sampled our schools and shadowed students, looked at data, talked to teachers, talked to principals, talked to district office staff to kind of elicit themes and see where we have an opportunity to really get that next big boost for our students. And, you know, the one thing I always caution is that when we think about that next big boost, it'll take 3 to 5 years to really make change. So that's going to be the challenge, is even as we make some shifts that will improve outcomes for our kids, it's going to take a little while to ramp those up. And one of the things that they've suggested is that we not look at our schools the same in terms of their needs. And they've given us sort of a framework to look at, to think about the schools that we have that have some variables like longevity in teaching staff, a more stable student population in different kinds of communities with different kinds of inputs and students bringing different sociodemographics to that school setting. And so then deciding in our schools that they're considering sort of more vulnerable, where our students may come in not having the kinds of exposures, not having the same kinds of outside experiences, and living in communities where they may have not as much access for rural, for issues of distance, et cetera, that we think about the do different for those, and that it not be a one size fits all. And as a parent, you know, we all know I had two children, same father, raised exactly the same, and they're very different in how they came to learning, how they experienced that learning environment, and what they needed. And, you know, I had one son who read by himself, and I had one son who needed the phonetic and phonemic awareness and a very systematic approach to learning to read. They both ended up being, you know, in the valedictorian groups in their high schools. So it wasn't as if they both weren't capable, but they definitely needed something different. And I think that's the other misnomer that people have about equity, is that it is indeed looking at our student populations who need more to access a high high-wage jobs in the future who need more to make sure that they have access to technology and the things that other families are able to provide quite easily. But it's also about looking within that classroom and seeing where that differentiation needs to happen. An equitable learning environment also means that I'm allowing students to move ahead and do the things that they need to do to meet their learning goals and not sort of making them hold up while I take care of another student population or student
right.
group. So, you know, it's a hard piece, the equal equality piece, because we don't want to leave anybody out. We don't want to shortchange anyone. We don't want to, I think it's a false dichotomy, have that notion that it's a zero-sum game, that if I give to one group, then somebody's going to suffer. And so I think that's what we want people to kind of wrestle with, is that if you have a child who needs tutoring, by not giving tutoring to the other child, you're not punishing that child or hurting that child. You're just making sure that the student who needs tutoring gets it to access at the same level that that other child already has. And so I think as much as we can get people to understand it from that own family sort of parental role, it helps us understand how we apply it then to the school setting and the district setting.
Sure. And I think it's probably easier for educators to get it, mm-hmm. although it's kind of different than what the thinking was maybe, you know, 10 years ago or,
right.
or it, that, you know, everybody's got to get exactly the same thing.
Right.
But I think it might be harder for parents to wrap their head around.
And that's why I think you have to go back to that parenting notion, because I'm pretty sure in most homes, there's a slight do different for each of your kids based on their needs. And one of your children needs you to go in the backpack to make sure that those materials yeah. are gotten out and that you know what's coming. The other child gets them out and tells you before you even have a chance. So you respond to those children differently in terms of their health, in terms of their physical well-being, their social, emotional well-being. So your children, some children need you to sit and give them the time to talk it out. The other one's going to talk it out to you, whether you want to hear it or not, while you're driving in the car. So you don't ignore the child who needs you to sit down with them, because that's the equity piece for that child. In order for them to meet that same need of expressing whatever that is, you as the adult have to do something different. And that's really our role as the system. We've got to respond differently. It's one of my concerns when we have only invitational sorts of tutorials or interventions, because we may offer something and we assume that people have the same ability to get to that, and that may not be the case. So those are the ways that we have to really think. What's our intentionality? Have we done something different to make sure that students who need that, that we as the adults, we as the drivers of the system, are doing everything we can to get that access to that child? I mean, obviously at some point, especially as they get into the secondary level, students have a lot more of their own responsibility in making some decisions. But it's still up to us, I do believe, to make sure that we've cycled back through enough times. You know, I've taught educational classes for adults, and I can tell you how many times in every class, I've never taught a class that you don't have adults who ask you for extensions, more time, who need something a little different from you and expect it as adult learners. And we just need to make sure we're doing the same thing for our kids.
Yeah, and that's 1,000% right. And that's it's not always easy, but it's
no.
what needs to be done.
Right.
And it's kind of like I went to a conference a couple years ago, and the speaker was talking about introverts versus extroverts, mm-hmm. and how, you know, the introverts in the class is basically a lot of times they are lost there mm-hmm. because nobody's paying any attention to them.
That's
and if
right.
you actually do teach the way they need to be taught
right.
or communicate with them the way they need to be communicated with, you find out that
all kinds of
they're
stuff.
Just introverts.
Right.
They don't like to speak in a group. They're not comfortable. But boy, they did get it.
And there's ways, you know, as a teacher, I taught English forever. And so public speaking, we had we have that strand of oral language. And so I would always allow students like that to present for me or to bring in their own small group of friends. And we would do it in a different mm-hmm. setting. And you'd be amazed at what they knew and they could do.
And even so, now you can have, mm-hmm. they can videotape
They can videotape
themselves.
It. We have yeah. so many. And that's the other piece for us, that we have such technology and ways to help and intervene. So we want to put on our creative thinking caps and think about how can we leverage and use some of the great things that we have out there to make sure that we're supporting more students.
Okay, so believe it or not, we're down to 2 minutes
oh,
already.
Wow.
I'm going to have you back in the fall so okay. we can lay everything out, because a half hour with the superintendent is not enough time. But what would you say are our biggest challenges that we need to address? And we'll just tease everybody.
Well, I do think it's the systems piece. I think right now for us, it's going to be about landing on some agreements across the district about our focus. And challenge isn't the right word, because I think people are ready for it. And the feedback that I've had from teachers has been very positive in that direction. It's the time to really delve into it and do it right, and to really help our students who need much more exposure and rigor, and to make sure that we're meeting them where they are. So I think it cycles back to the equity piece that we just talked about. But it's the fun challenge of being in education, and I have absolutely no doubt that we have all of the right ingredients. It's just getting them in the right measurements so that we actually get that outcome that we're looking for, and I'm just thrilled to be here and be a part of the work.
It's very exciting. I think it's an exciting time. We didn't really talk a whole lot about LCAP at all, but the local control accountability plan gives us more leeway in what we can do versus how it was, you know, five years ago, where the state was saying, here's your money and this is what you have to do with it.
Right.
Now we have input from the community. Input. We had great input this year from stakeholders,
we had great, and
community,
we want more.
Parents, and don't feel that just, you know, we're just going through the motions. That the input is
really valued, and
it's valued.
And we're going to look at ways to message that better, to really get it out so that people, you know, over the course of the year are thinking about those activities and what we're doing.
Okay, on that note, we're going to thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
And we're going to pick it up again very soon.
I look forward to it.
Next week, our guest will be our arts coordinator, Louisa Castrodale, and Rancho Mirage High Performing Arts Chair, Andy Eisenman, to talk about our partnerships with the Palm Springs Opera Guild and outreach programs in our school. Our show airs each Sunday on this station, and our podcast is uploaded each Sunday afternoon. Please subscribe by going to iTunes. Look for You Learn Something New. Press subscribe. Please tell all your friends to do the same. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.